Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, former NFL scout and now vice president of football and research at Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. For our Super Bowl preview, we have a very special guest today. It is Corey March, also from Sports Info Solutions, running all of the fantasy, gaming, and business development stuff that we do. And as always, we're joined by Justin Stein on the controls. Aaron, for once this week, I am not on the road. It is you on the road, and you are in Miami at the Super Bowl. How is it going?
I'm doing well, and it is beautiful, and there is sunshine outside. So first of all, apologies if my audio is not as good as usual, as I don't have my usual setup, but I am enjoying life here. It is wonderful outside. Of course, I'm spending most of my time inside a convention center, but outside it's great.
Yeah, that sounds pretty perfect. And seeing the video feed of you right now, it looks nice with that white wall behind you.
Woo! If I turned around to the other side, you'd see all the beautiful Art Deco hotels of Miami Beach. Now, if I were to complain, and it's hard to complain when you get a free trip to the Super Bowl, but you know, they put the media center and all the media stuff down on Miami Beach, which is beautiful. They put all the media themselves in hotels by the airport, which is half hour away, and then they didn't have any shuttles running between them. So we've all been stuck taking Ubers and Lyfts all week.
Ugh, that sounds rough, and I can't imagine the traffic situation is too good down there.
No, I've spent a lot of time in Miami's traffic, but I will say that even when Miami has traffic, if you look up in the sky, it's still beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. And let's loop Corey into the conversation now. Corey, we brought you on because we wanted to talk about some prop bets today, looking up into the Super Bowl. You ready to talk about some of that stuff?
Always. Always good to be here. First, especially good to be here when I can claim a prize. Matt, you took the Packers against the spread, and Aaron took the Titans against the spread, if I'm not
I think in the correct. Conference championships. Oh, yeah.
Yes, the conference championships. And I found out about probably 4 hours before the game started when I was listening to the podcast while I was shoveling my driveway. So another allusion to the weather there. I'm jealous that you're in Miami and not shoveling your driveway.
So if you hadn't listened to the podcast, we could have gotten away without having to.
Absolutely. Definitely could have pulled one over on me.
We were that close, Aaron.
Well, I will say somebody's covering the spread in this game, even if our picks for covering the spread didn't work out in the last game.
No doubt about it. All right, let's jump right in. Let's start off having some fun talking about these props. Corey, what do you have for us? What are the props that you're looking out for in this Super Bowl?
So we at Sports Info Solutions have a website, a prop betting machine. It can be found at sisbets.com. I actually did a write-up about some of the prop bets that you can find on that site, trying to figure out where there's value, where there's not. So I'll point you to the SIS newsletter, which you can sign up for at sportsinfosolutions.com for the full breakdown. But I'm going to touch on a few props that I like right off the bat. So one, for those that are betting who really like instant gratification and don't want to wait until the end of the game to find out if they win or they lose, or you know, don't want to bet on the coin toss, a popular prop bet for the Super Bowl is the over-under on the length of the national anthem. And there's actually a lot of analysis and thought that goes into this each year. This year, Demi Lovato is singing the national anthem. And the over-under, I've seen it anywhere from 2 minutes to 2 minutes and 3.5, 4 seconds. And we actually have some data here on Demi Lovato's most recent public national anthems that she's sang.
Getting deep into the analytics here.
Why wouldn't we? So Demi Lovato's most recent public national anthem was in 2017 at the Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor boxing match in Las Vegas, and that was timed at 2 minutes and 11 seconds, which is a comfortable over. Should be noted that her three previous public renditions were all under the mark here, but I'm leaning over here since she's been growing in popularity. Her most recent rendition was well over the mark, and I think this is a stage where you really want to drag it out and embellish it and soak up the moment. So put me down for over on that one. I hadn't considered that one myself. I did notice looking through the annual Football Outsiders column that Brian Knowles was with you. He also took the over on that one. I think Aaron and I, our expertise is probably a little bit different from that.
No, but I do like your explanation for why you're going over. And I think that that would convince me to go over as well if I wanted to actually put money on such a prop bet.
Funny story. And one of my all-time favorite betting stories has to do with this bet. I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago. And I believe the singer was Lady Gaga. And they made the initial line. And then word started to come out that she was sick. And the line actually plummeted down as a result of those reports. And she ended up going under on the number.
I thought you were supposed to do reverse line movement. This is violating all of your betting principles that you've taught me.
Imagine if this prop bet was available for all the random musicians who do the national anthem before random regular season games.
We might not be that far away, right?
Yeah. More anthem analytics.
All right, Corey, what else were you looking at as far as prop bets go?
Yeah, I'll give out one more. One thing that I noticed that I like that is if you're siding with the Chiefs, you might want to consider betting on Patrick Mahomes to win the MVP at plus 115 instead of taking the Chiefs to win the game at minus 122. I see those two as almost 100% correlated, going hand in hand, that if the Chiefs win, Patrick Mahomes is going to win MVP.
Yeah. The way that they play offense, it's really hard to imagine a situation where the Chiefs win this game and he's not the MVP.
Right. And I think it's too good of a storyline to pass up if the Chiefs win. Obviously, going to take a great game from Mahomes.
So that's interesting. You're playing with the line a little bit there. They're favorites, so you'd be on a minus line there, but you're taking the plus 115 and just saying hopefully it's not somebody else crazy unexpected.
Right.
I remember correctly, like the next 4 or 5 guys in the odds are San Francisco 49ers, because people are sort of, if the 49ers win, they don't know who's going to be MVP. But if the Chiefs win, it's so assuredly going to be Mahomes.
So, guys, I got to pop in. I was looking at a kind of more basic prop in this one. I was just looking at Jimmy Garoppolo. I saw an over under of 19.5 on his total completions for the game. And going off of sisbets.com and the projections that we do, I looked into that one. And even though it's easy to remember a few times recently where he's gone under that many completions or even that many attempts for that matter, I think this one is a big, big over for me. I love the over on 19.5 pass completions for Jimmy Garoppolo. I was curious to hear what you guys thought about that one.
I can support that one. You kind of talked about the recency bias there, maybe dragging the number down a bit. And this is the sort of game that some of the evidence is pointing to a high scoring game. The line, the total opened up at 51.5 and has shot up to 54.5, which is suggesting that the 49ers won't be in a position to just bleed the clock and run the ball relentlessly like they've been doing.
I will say Garoppolo has been below 19 completions in 6 of his last 8 games. So it's not just recency bias as in the NFC Championship game when he only threw the ball 8 times. It's actually recency bias over the last 2 months. But it's an interesting question of scheme versus weakness, right? Because if you go by Kansas City's weakness, San Francisco is going to run all the time. But if you figure Kansas City is going to probably try to stop the run, then San Francisco is going to counter that by throwing the ball. So I think I actually kind of like under, but it's close.
All right. Anything else from the prop betting realm before we get into more of the traditional game breakdown?
All I'm going to say is subscribe to the SIS newsletter and find out the rest of our breakdown.
Yep. Corey's been working hard on that this week, and it's exciting to check that out. So check out the SIS newsletter.
Hi, I'm Corey March of Sports Info Solutions, and I'm here to tell you about SISbets.com. SISbets.com is an advanced prop betting information tool powered by Sports Info Solutions. Now you can leverage our proven projections model to find value against the odds. You're never more than a few clicks away from knowing which pitcher may surpass his strikeout prop or whether your favorite running back projects to go over his rushing yards total. Just choose the type of bet, the player, and enter the money line to see the SIS Bets recommendation. That's SISbets.com.
let's get into the more classic analysis that we are known for, Aaron, and let's start to break down the matchups here. Before we get into kind of Chiefs offense against Niners defense and vice versa, is there anything big picture you're looking at here that you wanted to discuss?
I mean, big picture, I think if you look at Super Bowl, the history of the Super Bowl, defense actually tends to win out over offense when top offenses play top defenses. But that's only like, you're only looking at like 20 or 30 games. So the question is sort of, which is more important? What's the history of the Super Bowl or what's the history of NFL games in general? And I think that the latter is more important. I don't think there's anything particularly special about the Super Bowl that means that defenses, top defenses should tend to beat top offenses. My guess is there's a sample size thing going on. And because of that, I tend to favor Kansas City a little bit in this game, although I do think it's really close.
Yeah, I think I'm with you overall there. I'd give Kansas City the slight nudge, in my opinion here. But like everybody else, I don't think this one's I could see it being a blowout in Kansas City's favor. I couldn't really see it the other way. But
he doesn't really lose blowouts. What is it that he's never lost a game by more than one score as a Kansas City quarterback? So I'm with you. I can't really see a San Francisco blowout because even if they take a big lead, Kansas City should be able to come back. But I could really see a close game that goes either way.
Same thoughts there, Corey?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I've been back and forth on this game a lot. I think everybody expects it to be a really close game. Vegas expects it to be a really close game.
Are there any insights coming out of Vegas? As you see, the line hasn't moved a ton. You said the over went up. Anything that you're kind of reading between the lines there?
There's not much to go off of. The line, I think, opened at Kansas City -1.5 and has come down to Kansas City -1, which is not a very significant movement. I've heard reports of big bets being placed on both sides. So really, like I said, not much to read into from that perspective. The real weakness, which I'm sure we'll dive into further, is the Kansas City run defense, specifically matching up here against San Francisco's run offense that has been so dominant lately and over the course of the full season. But at the end of the day, I'm going to take Patrick Mahomes to transcend that weakness.
Okay, well, let's start there. Let's start our kind of deep dive with that San Francisco run game against the Chiefs run defense. I think this is one area on paper that certainly looks like a big mismatch. The Chiefs run defense, while it's been better over the past few weeks, certainly over the course of the season, that was a weak point for them. I think we've talked about those statistics before. One thing that I have an eye on in this game is looking at the pre-snap motion. It's something that we talked about Kyle Shanahan and a lot of the smart offenses, how they've used pre-snap motion this year. And it's never truer for anybody than it is for the Niners. And I think specifically when you get into what they're doing with Juszczyk and Kittle and being in that kind of 21 personnel most of the time, I think a lot of moving Kittle around and what they do in terms of getting him on the pre-snap move is really dictating what the coverage is going to be, or at least getting a read on what the coverage is going to be from the defense. So pretty interesting stat here. It's actually had a really big effect on how well they've run the ball this year when they've used pre-snap motion. With no pre-snap motion, 4.2 yards per attempt and a 37% positive play rate. With pre-snap motion, it's up to 4.9 and a 43% positive play rate. So that's one thing that I'm focused on here, and it'll be a cat and mouse game, I'm sure, with Spagnuolo and the way he kind of adjusts to the adjustments.
And like, you know, any number about the San Francisco run offense, I would be curious what those numbers look like if you remove weeks 6 to 11. Because if you go back over the course of the season, San Francisco had one of the top running games in the league for 5 weeks. And then they started having the injuries. And from week 6 to 11, they were missing either Kyle Juszczyk or George Kittle or both, right, in those games. And for those games, they're 31st in the league in run DVOA. And then starting week 12, they're number one again from week 12 to 20, if you include the playoffs, 5.7 yards per carry. And you see a similar split in passing, but the differences are nowhere near as big as they are in running. Like, we talk about the importance of offensive linemen, and they've also gotten their offensive line healthy, but like the importance of Juszczyk to Kittle in the blocking. I mean, just because Booger McFarland highlights something on ESPN Monday Night Football doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah, I think it's hard to overstate the importance of those two guys to their offense in both the run game and the pass game, and just what they do to create mismatch for you. In the way that they're utilized, you can utilize them in so many different ways. Those are amazing splits, going down a 31st running and then seeing what the Niners have done the rest of the season with those two guys. That's outrageous.
Yeah, and of course, San Francisco loves outside zone. And I looked at the SIS charting of types of plays, and their best run play by DVOA is outside zone. And Kansas City's defense specifically is below average against outside zone. Their second best run play is power. Kansas City is specifically below average against power.
You may have convinced me to change my side to San Francisco. Those are some amazing.
Except that
splits.
I still favor Kansas City, but this almost has convinced me to change my pick to San Francisco.
Yeah, that's some very convincing.
We know
stuff
that
right
passing
there.
Is more efficient than running, but if running is getting you 5.7 yards per carry, that's plenty efficient enough to keep doing it.
I actually did the same research that Matt did. I did it independently of the stuff going on in the R&D department here. And I noticed the offensive splits for the 49ers, like Matt mentioned. The 49ers ran pre-snap motion the most in the league. The Chiefs did it fifth most. The one thing that actually stood out the most to me was that the Chiefs' defense performed worse when their opponent used pre-snap motion. Half a yard more through the air when the offense used pre-snap motion, and almost a full yard more allowed on the ground when the opponent used pre-snap motion.
Yeah, and I think there's something to that with the complexity of what Spags is doing there in terms of whatever the offense shows formation-wise, there could be 20 different ways that the defense is going to respond, and it's all dependent on what that pre-snap look is, even with just one call defensively. So by putting guys in motion and by changing those responsibilities on the fly, I can definitely see intuitively why that would make sense and why that would help create more of an advantage.
The Chiefs actually were pretty good this year against 21 personnel, 4.2 yards per play. But, I mean, the way San Francisco uses 21 personnel is a lot different from the way that other teams tend to use 21 personnel. So I don't know how telling that number really is.
Yeah, 21 personnel, it's important to look at that. But at the same time, we can't just look at the personnel and the numbers and say, okay, two running backs and one tight end, and that's what they are, and we understand what that is. What that tells you is they're probably in their base personnel defensively. So it gives you a little bit in that sense. But I don't know any team in the NFL, like you're saying, that has Juszczyk and Kittle that they're running out there. Kittle can easily, you could consider him 20 personnel in terms of having him as a receiver, or you can consider it 11 personnel if you consider Juszczyk as a tight end and Kittle outside. So, I mean, it depends who the players are within that 21 personnel group. I couldn't agree more.
We talk about the running game, but San Francisco, 48.1% DVOA passing the ball from 21 personnel.
Either way, I think that's... They have good personnel for whether they want to run the ball or pass the ball. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Sticking on the run game for one more second, although kind of changing the subject a little, I did think that the San Francisco receivers could be a factor running the ball in this game. One of the props as I was looking around at that I saw that was kind of interesting was Deebo Samuel with half a carry in this game. I love the over on that one.
I see
Deebo getting the ball on a jet sweep.
Yeah, especially at such high stakes, they're going to want to get the ball in such a dynamic playmaker's hand one way or another, whether it's manufactured on a handoff through the air. I think he's going to be a focal point of that offense, and I think he had two carries last game and maybe one in the previous, so I'm with you.
San Francisco led the league in runs by wide receiver and tight ends if we remove wildcat plays and fake punts. And Kansas City only faced six such runs all season. So we have absolutely no idea how Kansas City's defense will do against runs like that.
Yeah. And then looking at the passing game a little bit, I think the matchups are pretty interesting too. Obviously on both sides, we're looking at the two premier tight ends in the league. So thinking about Kansas City and how they're going to slow down George Kittle is an important aspect of this one. Obviously the Honey Badger's been somebody that's been playing out of his mind throughout the whole playoffs. That's a big size mismatch there. So I'm not sure if he's the answer directly to handling that question. I think it's going to end up being a lot of combination stuff because I don't think they have anybody that they can stop Kittle in man coverage with. So it'll be a lot of different combinations, maybe some double teams, maybe some zone that they throw at him. But to me, I look at that in the passing game and I say, he's the one guy I want to take away. I almost want to take my chances letting Jimmy G get the ball outside to Emmanuel Sanders and Deebo Samuel. But I feel like if he can get the ball to George Kittle, then that's going to be the real problem for the Chiefs, especially as they're trying to balance their run defense along with that.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. San Francisco actually struggled to throw to receivers that were lined out wide this year. Only 6.2 yards per pass on these plays, which was 28th in the league. And Kansas City was really good against receivers lined up wide. So I'm with you, man. Kittle is the number one player I would want to stop other than the run game. I think using Tyrann Mathieu as some kind of rover to stop short crosses and then, you know, maybe putting two guys on Kittle. I don't know if you can do both of those things. You can if you're only rushing four.
I saw that the Chiefs this season, when they played man coverage, tended to line up Daniel Sorensen a good amount on the opposing tight end, at least in the sense that he was the most targeted defender against opposing tight ends in man coverage. And he's 6'2", so that's a little bit more of a sizes, you know, playing to his advantage there. So maybe that's...
I mean, no offense to Daniel Sorensen, but if you're going to tell Kyle Shanahan that it's going to be Kittle against Sorensen all day long, that is juicy.
Yeah, Kansas City was really strong against tight ends this year, but on an efficiency basis, they were really strong against tight ends. On a like amount basis, they faced a lot of passes to tight ends. So, I mean, I think, yeah, Kittle's the focal point of the San Francisco passing game.
Absolutely. All right, anything else that we wanted to explore kind of on that matchup, the Chiefs' defense against the Niners' offense?
One thing I'll point out is that while there are people who might think that the 49ers would have a harder time coming back from a late deficit because they're not as explosive as the Chiefs, the fact is they were the number one offense by DVOA this year when losing by more than a touchdown and third on defense. Garoppolo led four fourth quarter comebacks this year. So I think even if Kansas City takes a two touchdown lead, San Francisco is not out of it.
Right. That's a good point. It's not that they can only, if there's one thing that I think works in San Francisco's favor, I think they do have much more quote unquote balance in what they can do. It's not that if they get behind, then Jimmy G can't do anything. I think there's reason to believe that they can run a competent offense in that situation. Whereas the Chiefs, you know, I don't think anybody's really worried about them running the ball. I think, you know, every time that they hand the ball off, the San Francisco defense would breathe a sigh of relief.
Yay, they handed the ball off. They're going to get 3 yards super duper. Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of Damian Williams in this game. San Francisco is the best defense in the league against running backs in the passing game. And the Chiefs were actually not very good on screen passes in 2019, even though Andy Reid has always been considered an excellent designer of screens. So between the lack of running and the lack of receiving, I take the under on all of your Damian Williams yardage props.
Yeah, speaking of Damian Williams, did you see the story about Kareem Hunt saying that he was, what, pulled over on the side of the road and drunk and whatever else and depressed because he's not in the Super Bowl? And, man, it's got to be – I can't even imagine. All right, let's flip it on its head and let's go to the really interesting matchup in this one, the high-powered Chiefs offense, Patrick Mahomes against the San Francisco defense. This historically good San Francisco defense wasn't quite as good down the stretch as it was early in the year, but they appear to be back and in full force for the playoffs. I'm looking at this one, and I'm starting up front. I think there's a real, real possibility for a mismatch here, just like we've seen the San Francisco defensive line seemingly in a mismatch against every offense they faced. The Chiefs' offensive line has been good this year, but if there's one place that I look at this one, they have to be able to protect, especially on the interior here, to be able to hold up there if they want to have enough time to get the ball to all these fast playmakers that they have out there. I love the speed that the Chiefs have on offense. I don't care that the Niners want to play zone against it. I still think they're going to create a lot of problems for them in the secondary, but it's the ability to hold up against that front four that I think is going to be real key here.
Yeah, but you know, we've talked about this in our past playoff previews. The San Francisco front four, in a lot of stats, does not come out as good as people think they are. I mean, it comes out good if you consider that they hardly ever blitz. So the amount of pass rush that they get from only four guys is impressive. But they're only 13th in pressure rate. And there's something similar to that in ESPN's pass rush win rate. They're number one in adjusted sack rate. But if you look at pressures rather than sacks, partly because they do tend to only rush four guys, they're not the best team in the league.
Yeah, we have them. So when we look at expected points added per play, we have them when bringing four at minus 0.16 expected points added per play. So we have that as fourth best in the league. And that's kind of a total value thing. But yeah, we see the same things. Not the highest.
Absolutely, but that's right. That's coverage. That's part of that is the strength of their coverage, not just their pass rush.
Right. And so the whole defense, and that's a really good point, that it's the performance of the whole defense when they bring four and not just the fact that it's like they're running around in the backfield of every offense that they face. What's really interesting with this one is that Nate Weller pointed this out for an article that he wrote this week. The Kansas City offense has been the best against defenses that only bring four rushers. So they averaged 0.25 expected points added per play against four rushers, and that's 8.2 yards per play on those dropbacks where the defense only rushed four. So that's a really interesting one to look at. And a lot of times when you see with Mahomes, it's not just the first play that they call. You know, sometimes the front four, they can disrupt that kind of stuff, but it can be the second play that happens after that. The Niners are used to dealing with this with Russell Wilson. Mahomes has a lot of that similar sort of ability where just because you beat him off the line or you create an offensive line blown block, that doesn't mean that the play is over. And his ability to extend, especially with that speed that they have at the receiver position, it's a strength against strength right here that is, I think, going to be one of the key things to watch.
Yes, I wrote about this in the Football Outsiders preview. Mahomes, 10 scrambles in the last two games. I would expect him to scramble a few times, and they're likely to be strong gains. Even though 49ers are relatively good on these plays, scrambles are so efficient that being relatively good still means you're giving up efficient plays. And Mahomes had the second highest DVOA on scrambles in the league behind Ryan Tannehill, if we include the postseason.
It really seems like Mahomes has eyes in the back of his head. He just makes plays. He's so cool in the face of adversity. He just like, you know, he kind of sees things without even like laying eyes on them. The way there was a play where he like basically kept an inch of his body behind the line of scrimmage and threw a pass, but he knows where everybody is on the field without even specifically identifying them.
Yeah, it's something that I saw, leaving you almost at a loss for words. It's something that I saw with Drew Brees a lot, and going through practice, the way Drew runs every rep in practice is not only is he throwing the ball to the first look if it's there, but then you'll see him take a hitch and do every other single look on the play, making sure that he's mentally completing a pass to every single player. And it really results in this sixth sense sort of thing where you just know where all the guys are on the field. It's even more surprising when you see it. Somebody young like Mahomes and somebody with all of the physical talent that he has, and combining it with that sixth sense that you're talking about, I'm with you. It's unbelievable. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he can keep that going with Nick Bosa and company bearing down on him.
I will say, I know there's been research done this year by some of our compatriots suggesting that man versus zone splits are not predictive. But it is worth noting, just to talk about this season, that Mahomes had 9.7 yards a pass against zone coverage this year.
Yeah, just absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, maybe it hurts the correlations that he's so good in both situations. And a lot of quarterbacks are really bad in both situations. So
right. He had only 7.3 yards per pass against man coverage, which is, you know, still above average.
Yeah, what a chump. And not just him, the receivers too. We got to give those guys credit. I really love the way that the Chiefs have built with Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman, taking the top off the defense, constantly creating space. I'm really interested to see this week how the cover three, which is what San Francisco likes to stay in a lot of time, kind of a match cover three that they do, very similar to what Seattle used to run. They'll do some match quarters out of it too. I'm really curious to see if they can run that cover three against the four verts that Kansas City wants to threaten. Four verts, for anybody that doesn't know, it's exactly what it sounds. You have four guys running go routes across the field. And this is a sort of route concept that creates trouble for cover three, kind of for obvious reasons. You're splitting those three guys out and stretching them. So you've got all the guys in all the seams of the defense. And then along with that four verts, you know, if you start to commit guys back deep to guard all of that, then all of a sudden you've got really fast guys that you can get the ball to underneath. You can have Damian Williams out of the backfield. You can have Travis Kelce in a one-on-one situation. which is just a problem. So I'm looking at that. Will the Niners be able to stay in kind of their bread and butter coverage, or will they start to do a little bit more different stuff to mix it up against this unique passing offense?
And here's the thing. Those deep passes, if Mahomes has enough time to throw them, San Francisco's defense ranked only 12th against deep passes compared to second against shorter passes. I'm using 16 yards or more as the definition of a deep pass. And the real problem was yards after the catch. San Francisco allowed an average of 10.4 yards after the catch on deep passes. No other defense in the league was above 7.1. It was like the one weakness of their defense this year.
And by the way, Kansas City gets a lot of yards after the catch on deep passes.
Yeah, that is not a good weakness to have against Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman.
And then looking at Kelce, I wanted to talk about him a little bit because the splits with him are really interesting. And not just the splits of whether they go to him or don't go to him, but we were looking at their offense with him as a single side receiver. So Nate Weller pointed this one out as well. And basically, the Chiefs' offense is pretty good when Kelce's not isolated as the single side receiver. So we're just saying the solo receiver on one side. It could be 3-by-1, 2-by-1, 1-by-1, whatever. When he's out there, they're pretty good. 1.10 EPA per play, 46% positive play rate. But when they isolate him and they're running either 3-by-1 with him on the one receiver side or anything else like that, their EPA per play is up at 0.32, and the positive percentage is 54%. So that's 8.5 yards per play. So it's not necessarily that they're going to him there, but the threat of having Kelce as the single receiver on one side, you're almost forcing the defense to commit two guys over there to help deal with him. And what that does, kind of opening up the entire Chiefs offense, and then what you're doing there with Hill and Hardman on the same side potentially lined up as one another, that's where they've been really scary.
Yeah, and I mean, all this stuff is – this is why, despite all the stuff about San Francisco's running game, I just lean a little bit towards the Chiefs. I just think that speed kills and Mahomes kills, and I just think their offense is, despite the quality of the San Francisco defense, going to score a lot of points. I think San Francisco will score a lot too, but this is why I lean Kansas City a little bit.
I'm with you. One guy that, again, gives me pause from that San Francisco side of things, Fred Warner. We've talked about him this season really emerging as a star on that Niners defense. The Niners as a team have been second best at stopping tight ends in terms of EPA this year. And a big part of that reason has been Warner. He's the second best cover line linebacker in terms of total points. And he's been number one in the NFL against tight ends in terms of total points this year. So potentially Fred Warner being involved in that matchup could be something that could slow them down.
If Warner can shut down Kelce on his own, or at least keep Kelce somewhat contained to less than 50 yards on his own, that frees up San Francisco to do a lot more in coverage on the other guys.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine anybody handling Kelce on his own, but
that's why it's an if. Really,
yeah.
Yeah, definitely a crucial matchup there. It seems like Kelce is the preferred target. I'm Holmes in general, but specifically against zone. And we had San Francisco rating out really well, like we talked about, against tight ends. They were number two in expected points allowed to
same
opposing
tight ends.
Same
in DVOA, yep.
Yeah, negative 7.5. So negative results when teams threw to their tight ends.
Interesting. All right, Aaron, we wanted to check in with you about the special team situation in this one. Anything to be gleaned from the DVOA of the special teams of these two teams?
It's closer than the regular season numbers show, because the weakness of San Francisco's special teams in the season was Robbie Gould having some struggles early in the year. And we know that field goal kicking is kind of inconsistent, and Gould has good career numbers. So I wouldn't really be worried about Robbie Gould going forward. Kansas City's other advantages on kickoffs, where they're a little bit better than the 49ers on both kickoffs and kick returns. But I think the basic summary of special teams is both teams are good on special teams, but Kansas City is higher variance, which means if there is a special teams play that turns this game, I think it's more likely to come from Kansas City, either good or bad.
Interesting stuff. They've got the explosive guys for sure, but we have seen a couple of breakdowns from them this year, so that makes sense. In terms of X factors, one thing I was looking at was the coaching matchup in this one. I think you've got obviously top coaches on both sides, probably both top five coaches in the league. Throw them there after, you know, your Belichicks and Sean Paytons of the world. But Kyle Shanahan returning to the Super Bowl, where he was famously disappointed as the Falcons offensive coordinator, and Andy Reid, who's historically been frustrated by the Super Bowl for years and years and years. So really interesting to look at those two guys there. And I do wonder how much Mike Shanahan might be of assistance to Kyle Shanahan versus this really being kind of purely his show, and what else might come out of all of that.
It's interesting because the last time that these guys were in the Super Bowl, for each of them, they made mistakes in clock management. For Andy Reid against the Patriots, it was taking too much time when he was behind. For Kyle Shanahan against the Patriots, it was not taking enough time when he was ahead. I think this time, if the 49ers have a lead, the quarterback is going to allow the clock to get down to 2 or 1 second before Garoppolo snaps the ball. Garoppolo's not going to be snapping the ball at 15 seconds the way Matt Ryan was.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else you guys wanted to touch on before we get out of here?
I'll give a quick X factor. Just something that I found interesting when I was poking around at some stats. I'll be interested to see the depth of the passing game. Aaron talked about the great, we talked about the great speed of the Chiefs offense and the 49ers being a little bit vulnerable to run after catch. One thing I did see was that when we're specifically looking at air yards, the Chiefs allowed the fewest air yard completions of 10-plus yards. The 49ers allowed the fourth fewest. So it'll be interesting to see if one defense is able to keep the big plays in check when one, allows a few big plays. I think, big plays are always a big X factor, but in an instance where two defenses are so good at limiting deep passes, that'll be a big factor here.
Garoppolo is very efficient this year on deep passes, but they didn't do many of them. They only did like 4 of them per game that went more than 15 yards downfield. So while he has really good numbers on them, they're not doing a lot of them.
All right. We'll have to see how all of the matchups play out. This has been our Super Bowl preview podcast. We want to thank all the listeners for another great year. It's been our best year yet doing the Off the Charts podcast, and we need to thank all of you for making that happen. As always, please help us to spread the word. Let your friends know to listen to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. Check it out before the big game this weekend. Subscribe, rate, and please write reviews. As always, you can hit us up on Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS and at FB Outsiders. And keep your eyes out for the 2020 Football Rookie Handbook. Our SIS Football Rookie Handbook is going to the publisher tomorrow. It'll be there. And then by the end of the month of February, by the time we are in Indianapolis for the combine, the book will be on the shelves. It's got all kinds of scouting reports, player evaluations, and of course, our proprietary advanced statistics that we collect here at Sports Info Solutions for all the top college prospects. So you need to check that one out. That's the 2020 Football Rookie Handbook. For my co-host, Aaron Schatz, our producer, Justin Stein, and our guest, Corey March, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.